So then, hi, welcome to That Millwall Podcast. We're back for another episode. This is episode number 14. I did get it wrong last week, but still, don't worry. Today's a guest. We've got a special guest, but as always, I have the football guru with us, the one and only Kai Bennett. Good evening, Kai.
Good evening to you too, Mickey. How you doing?
Not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Not too bad at all. So, enjoying the sunshine. So, yeah, topping up the tan. Our special guest tonight is Twitter famous, so famous they made a copy account of him on transfer day. He works for the South London Press. Most Millwall fans will know him. Most train spotters definitely know him. We've got the one and only Richard Cowley. How you doing?
I'm very good, thanks, Mickey. Yeah, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. All good, all good. So thanks very much for joining us today. Hopefully we give you an easy ride. It shouldn't be too hard, but... yeah, hopefully. No difficult questions.
Well, that's good to hear, because I'm usually the one that tries to ask a few difficult questions. Whether that actually happens that often, I don't know. But yeah, be gentle with me. I don't do too many podcasts.
That's it. We'll be gentle. But look, if you want to listen to Rich share the secrets of being a football journalist, then that's quite easy. Just come back after this. Twitter sensation, a football journalist who supports a dodgy team somewhere along the river, who we've had a great away day there probably about 6 years ago when Millwall fans overtook a Korean wedding, what was taking place on the park next to Fulham's ground. But we got the one and only Richard Cowley from South London Press. Good evening, Richard.
Good evening. How are we doing?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. So, yeah, that was the first year we played Fulham in a while, and we went all the way down there. I think we took about six boats, and where we moored up, and obviously you walked through the park, there was a Korean or child, I think it was a Korean wedding taking place, and they were having pictures on the river in the park, and all of a sudden they got inundated by about 4,500 Millwall fans, because we literally took over it. Because you had the neutral stand, we literally took every ticket in the neutral stand and all our allocations. So I think we took nearly about 7,500, 8,000 fans there. It was manic. But, yeah, it was a jolly good day out. But, yeah, there's still those wedding photos popping around, I think. And they'll be looking at that going, didn't invite all these guests. I don't know who they are. So,
they're not going to forget that in a hurry, are they?
No. So I suppose we'll start... as the latest bit of information was there, was how was it for you then on transfer deadline day then? Because obviously you report on the South London clubs, you do the train spotters and you do us. So how was it for you that day? Sorry, I had to throw the dig in there.
Well, Millwall was fairly calm, as it tends to be most ends of the sort of windows. You kind of find that Millwall are fairly organised and get most of their business done. So there was only... obviously, the possibility of one deal being done, that always looked to be the case unless there was any dramatic outs, which there obviously weren't, apart from obviously Marlon Romeo going. But there weren't other ones like John Daddy and maybe Tomo that would have, I think, opened up a bit more budget for other deals to come in. Obviously, Charlton were busy. They still had quite a bit to do. Transfer window is a funny one. Like, obviously, you do well. You know, the fans want that interaction, which I get. It's as a journalist, sometimes it can be a bit of a stress, really, because you're kind of trying to get to the bottom of what's going on, and it isn't always mega easy because there's a lot of names and it's very fluid. It's moving all the time. You know, there's an element of sort of plate spinning. So like a club will have three or four players on the go. Trying to piece all that together can be quite difficult. But luckily with Millwall, it was all fairly easy to keep on top of. Obviously, the one deal in with Shehi Ojo coming in. So it wasn't too bad. But I'm kind of relieved once it's done, because you think, right, we can just concentrate on games. It's not always thinking what's going on with transfers. And, you know, you can get on with reporting on the matches. But obviously, transfers are a big draw for the website. It's what people ask about more often than not. Half the time, I can't say. People ask me quite often any updates. And it's as if you're going to withhold the information, which... Obviously, if ever I can write stuff or I can put stuff out there, I always do. So, but I don't mind people asking, but it just means that sometimes I look like I'm a bit of a rude sod, not answering them and ignoring them.
I mean, OJ was a come up on the outside, really, didn't he? I mean, no one really thought we were going to go after that player until probably you posted your tweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then everyone jumped, because I think... Emil YouTube done it, and because he was doing a live feed, he popped it up, and a couple of others jumped on it from there. But no one really knew who he was or really that he was available.
No.
And where was that through? Was that through our scouting, or was that just through relationship with Gary's got, or do you know how that come about?
I think it's a combination, to be honest. I mean, the player that I think they were obviously interesting, I mentioned it, I think, in a few pieces as well, was Luke Freeman. They obviously were keen on him. I think he was obviously a different option to what they've brought in, because he's a sort of creative attacking midfielder that plays more centrally, very clever on the ball. He's from Dartford, so I think it kind of worked, perhaps, like being able to get back family back nearer to home. The problem with Freeman was that it sounded like it was all systems go for quite a bit of the towards the back end of the window. But then obviously he got in, he played, didn't he, in their last game. He came on at half time, played well by all accounts. Obviously, I didn't see it, but played well by all accounts. The Sheffield United fans like him. I suppose Jokanović coming under a bit of pressure to probably bring him into the side when the team aren't playing. But, you know, Sheffield United haven't really started like West Brom and Fulham have they? So I think that kind of then meant that that door suddenly closed. And I think then you look at the other options that are out there. And I don't think you can say that Shay is sort of a like-for-like replacement. He's obviously not. It's interesting, though, you know, I mean, Adam Barrett, Gary mentioned that Adam Barrett was on the phone to David Livermore. So they, I think as well, they had conversation. I don't know whether Chopper got involved. But the thing I would say is that with Chopper and Livers, one of the things I learned over the time covering the club when they were there, they were really strong on having the right kind of characters and the right kind of people that would fit into that changing room. And that's why that changing room has been so good for so many years. And the bedrock of that was Chopper and obviously, well, I suppose Chopper more than Livers, because Livers was a coach. So I think they probably did a bit of background. I'm guessing at that stage, you're probably thinking, who can we get? And I think he's not a bad option to bring in. I mean, he scored, I think it's off the top of my head, was it 5 goals, 7 assists last season for Cardiff?
Yeah, it is. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's a good option. I mean, whether he's exactly what Millwall need, I guess we'll find out as we go along. I thought it was a solid rather than sort of not blow your socks off window for Millwall, but it can be difficult, you know. Millwall have been in the Championship for quite a while. You can spend an awful lot of money and not really progress your team that much and not really give yourself much of a better chance of getting promoted. So I think that's the dilemma for Millwall. How deep do you go? Well, it's John Belson, isn't it? How deep does John want to go in terms of dipping into his pockets and spending a bit more money?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if John thought that the Premiership was reachable, then I think he'd probably invest some money into it if we needed to. I think John's a great chairman for us, yeah. You know. He has been over the years. We've spoken about him quite a few times on the show. Some other on the transfer window was, I suppose, really the writing's been on the wall for a while that Romeo was going to leave. And was that last minute, or was that a bit more than, you know, we knew it was going to be happening before, and we just, was it just really deciding what club he was going to go to?
Yeah, I think probably with Marlon, I think he was always going to. The likelihood was that he would probably move on in this window for various reasons, which
yeah,
I won't really go into too much detail on that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think the problem was whether Portsmouth could come to a figure that would make it workable. And I think that was always the problem. It was the same with Tomo in previous windows, perhaps, that they liked him as a player, but sometimes he was maybe seen as more important to Millwall. I'm potentially that last window. I think if a club had probably given a bit more budget up, it might well have happened. So that was the question with Marlon, I think, as to whether he would go or not. I think people probably, I would say that I was speaking to, expected him to go.
Yeah.
And so that one wasn't a huge surprise. I mean, obviously, I did the story at the start of the summer where I said that the club were open to offers for John Daddy, which seemed to be well received by a lot of Millwall fans. I mean, the problem with that is you can make a player available, but actually getting them to move or them deciding they want to go, you can't always do that. And I think I mentioned it in the paper last week that John Daddy did have interest from abroad and from League One, but didn't feel they were the right moves for him. So,
and also, it all depends on how much money he's on. If he's on a good whack here and he's, you know, he might as well just see out his contract because there's not a lot really the club can do about it. And that's the problem.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the thing is, you know, people say, like, oh, the club should just pay him up. But I mean, like, that's like if you had an employee and you thought you might be able to use them, you're not just going to say, I mean, normally a player has to take a percentage or whatever. That can get quite messy. Obviously, John Daddy came from Reading. He won't be on a low salary, certainly. So I think there was interest and that potentially was at a level that worked to free up a bit of money in the wage bill, maybe for Millwall to do something else. But I mean, I don't know, John Daddy's obviously got to make his own decision. He's got that contract. I mean, if he wants to stay, he's got the possibility. He's not going to feature very much. He's going to come out of contract next summer. And is that a good decision not to maybe go abroad or to League One, maybe score more goals, and you maybe then get a bit more of a demand for you, and that helps with your next move? But so hard, isn't it? I think when you sign players, you have to sort of work on the basis you might keep those players for the duration of their contract. And you saw it even to a large degree almost with Yuri Skalak, didn't you? I mean, Yuri almost did the whole of his contract. I think he left maybe the last window before. That's the problem.
Bench, getting paid good money for sitting on a bench. Being a warm-up. So yeah. Obviously, the two youngsters, Alex Mitchell has gone to Leighton, hasn't he?
Yeah, Leighton.
That's a good move. I see that personally as a good move for him.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think young players going out, I just think it's huge. I mean, I know fans want to see them. I think the problem you've got is that players come on so much quite often when they go and play regular football. I mean, going back to another player from a different club, I remember years ago, Scott Parker was in and out of Charlton's team, went to Norwich on loan and came back. And all of a sudden you had this creative midfielder who came back and just crunched people, made tackles, you know, had a bit of both. And his career just went from strength to strength. So I get that people want to see people like Alex Mitchell probably come in or Isaac up front, because obviously he did very well. But there's levels to this, isn't there? And I'm not saying they can't play at championship level for Millwall, but sometimes you've got to do what Danny McNamara did, go out, play for half a season, do really well, gain confidence, belief that you can play at that level, and then you come back and you really can make an impact.
I mean, I think it's good. I mean, Kai, anytime you want to come in for it, just Kai, no problem. But I think Isaac going back to Sutton is a great move for him because he achieved so much last season with them. And it's like a little thank you from the club to say, look, you know, you're really progressing really well. We are going to get you in our team going forward. But right now, we think the best move is for you to go back with the team you were playing with last season. You've done so well for them. See what you can do now on an upper league and see if you can still do it. And then going forward, we'll look at trying to get you in because, you know, he is the player what we're missing out on at the minute. He's the player what we're screaming out for. But we need to have a little bit more development on him to go because at the moment, I don't know if he's ready for championship.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a huge jump, isn't it? Going from National League football where you've done very well, but to then suddenly say, okay, you're going up against championship teams. And particularly when you look at the top-end championship teams, because, you know, some of those teams have got such strong sides, such experienced defenders. It is a massive, massive jump. And I think you would normally expect a player to probably have shown what they can do at least at League Two level before they would get that kind of opportunity, maybe even arguably at League One. And he's young, isn't he, Isaac? I mean, he's he's what, 21, I think, off the top of my head. He's he's got a bit of time. I don't think championship level. I don't think you can necessarily. Some players come through like Carvalho at Fulham's playing at 18, but they're kind of special cases. It's not something that tends to happen at a lot of clubs. I don't think not at championship level anyway.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you fully. I mean, obviously, this week we got the news that Tyler is now injured. It seems as if he's got quite a nasty tear on his hamstring and potentially going to be out for a couple of months. Obviously, he's having surgery with our doctors at Millwall. What's the latest on him at the moment?
Yeah, I don't think there's any actual real timescale beyond the fact it will be... You know, he'll be out for at least a good couple of months. I mean, I haven't actually I've had a week off this week, so I haven't really caught up with exactly what the prognosis is on the injury. I really like Tyler Bewery. I saw him play. He was one of those players that sometimes when you're watching as a journalist, you're watching a game and someone will just stand out like a player you hadn't known anything about. And I remember seeing him. He played for Wimbledon against Charlton, and he came on. Waddy Downs, I think, was the manager at the time for Wimbledon. And he brought him on at the Valley in about the last 15 minutes. And he got on the ball time and time again. He was brave on it. He drove down the side. He was putting decent balls in. And straight away, you're sat there and you're watching the game and you're thinking, this kid looks like he's got something about him. And then obviously, he did so well at Wimbledon at the end of that season. He then decided not to sign his contract. And obviously, Millwall signed him, agreed a deal to sign him. So he's someone that I think has got some really good attributes. Like, I think he's got some real potential. So it's such a shame that when he's just beginning to really kick on that loan, that it's been cut short. Because if he's out for a couple of months, if that is the time scale, it's going to take him obviously a while to get back up to fitness, and then he's going to need games, and maybe that means you don't see him in a Millwall shirt this season. Maybe he has to go out again in January. I don't know, but I guess that's something the club will have to kind of look at as we get nearer to January. If they're struggling for creativity and they can't bring players, it depends what happens in the January window. I'm sure it's all up in the air at the moment, I would have thought, with him.
Yeah, no, it's a shame because a hamstring injury is a naughty injury, really, isn't it? But, yeah. You know, it is.
Too for quicker players and wide players.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's it. And just hope, because obviously if you have your hamstring, they normally shortened a bit when they put it back in, didn't they? Mm. Sort of shortened and then, you know, if you don't do the right recovery, then it can always haunt your career going forward. So hopefully he has a full recovery. I mean, he's come back to us and we've got, you know, we've got some good guys in the medical team at Millwall. We've got, you know, some really good guys there. So, we're just fingers crossed that, you know, if you're listening, you know, get well soon, fella. And I hope you do. So, obviously, you speak to all the players regular, or you get access to the players regular and whatnot. Who's your favourite player then to have a conversation with?
Oh, okay.
The reason I ask that is because this week, obviously, Jed's appeared on about two or three different media channels. He's done a podcast, I think, for the Championship or the Football League. He's been on Talk Sport, and he seems to enjoy, and he comes across really well on there. And I just wondered, you know, out of the players who we watch week in, week out, you obviously get to see them face to face or telephone calls and that. I just wondered which one is your favourite or which one you think is, you know, the jokers and whatnot with the
bunch. Well, I would say as a journalist, you tend to rate players as the ones that are going to give you the best quotes and not. You know, when you get to Premier League level, quite often you find they're so media trained, you just don't really get anything of any real interest to make into an angle, a headline, whatever it might be. And I'm not saying it has to be sensational, the angle, it just has to be something interesting.
And they have their PR specialist with them.
Exactly, yeah, that's the thing. And you might have certain Premier League clubs, you'll have the actual comms team there, and they'll say, oh, that bit there, that's not for using, you know, like, and so journalists at that will be like, right, okay. So that happens as well. In terms of Millwall, I mean, it's not controversial. I've got a huge admiration for Jed. I think he's a cracking player. And I think as well, he's a genuinely good interview. He always has been. He's always somebody that I would kind of, if there's a big game coming up and I want to get a nice player interview, he's someone you can do that with. You can chat to him about stuff and feel relaxed. You don't feel if you're straying off of football that it's going to be a problem, which some players obviously don't want to do, which is fair enough. But Jed's good as gold, so he'd definitely be up there. I mean, there's been good ones over the years. Morrow was brilliant. Morrow was so good. He did not care. The last spell he had at Millwall, when I was obviously covering the club, he didn't care if he upset people with what he said. And I remember one where you just played Charlton and he got George Teixeira, their defender, had been sent off. And Morrow, it was just like amazing insight into the way that his mind worked. He said, "Oh, what me and Greg's do before a game is we pick the weak, what we view to be the weak centre-back for me to basically be on. And I try and bully him and I try and put him off his game." And you're like, as a journalist, that's the kind of stuff you want, because he's giving you proper insight and he doesn't mind about telling you. And he said, I'll just keep cranking him up until hopefully he loses his rag, or I can feel I can bully the players so that I can just dominate them. And he said, we'll always have a look and say, which one am I going to be on in the game? And that kind of stuff is just, it's just brilliant. So he was good. I'm going back a few older ones. A few good ones have left. Byron Webster was always a brilliant interview as well. Great fun, Byron.
But imagine massive he as well.
Yeah.
I sat for a game one game, I can't remember what it was now, with him, and he was injured and he was sitting right at the top, and where the directors sit, right behind, right at the top underneath the TV gantry where the TV camera is. And he was there on comms with obviously Chopper and that down the bottom, and he was just sitting there, conversations going, so and so keeps playing out of line and this player's doing this. And you look around, you think, who's he talking to? He's just got his phone in and he's just sitting there watching the game, but giving tips and pieces of where people were playing out and all this. And they were getting closed down, and it was literally, you could see that he was literally the eyes in the stadium. So wow. Even though he weren't playing, he was there. So his football knowledge is obviously second to none, that people are putting him up there to look. He had his foot over the chair where he's resting his foot, just laid back watching the game. You're sitting on the end of the road going, yeah, he's right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, the players are picking up. So, it was a good insight.
It makes you realise when you chat to players and they're a bit more relaxed and they talk to you about stuff, it just makes you realise how little sometimes us as journalists or as fans, you know, the difference with football is, like, as we always say, like, I can go and say, well, I think this X, Y and Z about Fulham, and I think that he should be doing this and they should be playing this person. But, of course, if you actually speak to a manager, they will give you an explanation if they feel in the mood to. They could probably give you an insight into it that we don't really know. And that's the thing that I think's always... I remember Carl Robinson a few years back, when he was Charlton manager, getting asked something, and he went into great detail. Well, this is the reason we did this. And you're thinking, okay, that explains it. You know, like, because I just watch it as a football journalist thinking, oh, well, Sounso's not playing very well. And they'll say, yeah, but this guy there was pulling him out of position. And then... There's like levels to the knowledge that even like someone like Steve Brown, who does stuff for BBC London, he's brilliant as a summariser, brilliant. And some of the stuff he comes out with, I just think, wow, like that's the knowledge of where he's played. I don't know what he's played, Brownie, but he played as a centre-back, he played in the Premier League. He's done 10, 11, 12, 13 years as a pro, well, probably more than that as a pro. And he just knows stuff. Like when centre-backs go down towards the end of the game, like... you know, they're getting treatment and he'll say, it's a ruse. You basically go down, get stretched, and it's towards the end of the game. It's just a time-wasting exercise. It's just little bits like that some people might know, but there's so much more, I think, to it. So I think going back to the question about the player interviews, Matt Smith's always a good interview as well. I mean, he's obviously a clever guy. And yet again, I always enjoy speaking to Matt. But most of them are good. There's not really any that are a problem. Well, there aren't. There's not really any at Millwall that are a problem anyway.
Oh, but there is a Charlton.
I tell someone there was a very good interview, one of your ex-players, but much in his younger days, Lyle Taylor.
Oh,
Lyle was dynamite every time you could get something good out of Lyle. And their comms team kind of knew that. They'd be like, oh, no, what's he saying now? And yeah, Lyle was Lyle. He would say what he thought, so he was good value.
Because sometimes I know journalists and that, where sometimes they have an interview and they know what they've got is dynamite, but if they printed it, it would cause them so much trouble that they have to sometimes go back to the player and go, that bit you said there, are you happy with me printing that? And they go, oh, shit, no, don't do that.
Yeah, more often than not, you know, it's that sometimes you play. I have one. I won't say who it was. It wasn't Millwall, and it wasn't particularly. It wasn't necessarily really ultra damaging. But I did an interview a while back with a player, and he said some stuff, and then I got a phone call from one of the head of comms, and they just said to me, like, they don't really want that going in. They don't think it's great, and I kind of get that because, you know, we talk. I can talk in the heat of the moment about something. And if everything is just used, okay, fair enough. But if it's one-to-one, you're kind of, that person's giving you their time. You're having a conversation. They're at a football club saying, you're thinking, well, this isn't the way that you would behave. I don't. So sometimes you make that decision. If someone says to you, do you mind leaving that little bit out there? 9 times out of 10, you'll do it. It's different in a press conference, I would say. If you're in a press conference and there's a load of other journalists and someone sat at a table and they say something, what you're going to do? There's nothing else you can do. But I do think over the years, 100%, I've not used certain stuff, normally at the request of the person I'm interviewing. But that's the way that you begin to get a relationship with people, where they trust you. And then they tell you stuff. They might tell you more stuff, and they might say, well, this is what's going on, but don't write it. And so that's how you get. You don't just instantly get that level of where people open up to you without them thinking that they can trust you, is what I'm saying. So
yeah,
it's kind of goes hand in hand.
I understand with that. And also, it's that trust where, like when we started with the transfer window, it's where you'll get little bits of information and you'll be able to place two or three bits of information from various contacts and come up with the answer, what you're looking for, and then you can then go back to the likes, I don't know, say for instance, if it was Millwall, you could then go back to someone like Billy or Steve Kavanagh and say, is it true you're in for XYZ player, so that you've got more information to be able to probe and go forward, rather than just hoping for them to give you information, which, you know, unless it's signed, sealed and delivered, then they might not necessarily be giving you that information.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, though, sometimes is you can go to, I don't know, player's agent, you can have a chat with them, and they might tell you something and say, like, off the record, this is what's happening. But the thing is, I think sometimes, and I've done this quite a long time, you kind of get an idea the way it works, but I don't think always an agent would then just leave it at that. They'll probably pick up to the club and say, oh, I've just had that person on the phone to me. So sort of things kind of, I think the level of knowledge and the way that information passes around, people, you sometimes think that, obviously, journalists work with almost like that sort of confidentiality clause, like, I'm not going to share that information. I'm not, you know, I don't reveal sources. That's just standard practice. It doesn't mean that source wouldn't maybe go back to someone and say, well, I had Richard from the SLP on. He asked me X, Y, and Z. So that kind of stuff can happen. But yeah, it's definitely part and parcel of it, just trying to unearth that information as you go along. And sometimes you just can't use it. Sometimes, you know, in terms of transfers, you know, you can play 2-3 weeks before it's anywhere. It tends to, I would say... Sorry, go on.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, quite often I think it can leak from agents, which is good, you know, it's good for someone like myself. I mean, there's a website, Football Insider, that's obviously getting a lot of stuff at the moment, and it always says that a recruitment source at Charlton, a recruitment source at Millwall, you know, has told us, well, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit cynical with it, but I don't think you tend to reveal where your source is. You can try and pretend it's somewhere else, but I think 9 times out of 10, when deals get closer, there might be any number of reasons an agent might want it in the public domain.
And Millwall's very good at closing down moles.
Yeah.
With misinformation.
Yeah. That's the other thing. It's the you know, people can go down that misinformation route if they are worried about, I'm not talking about necessarily Millwall, but any club or any organisation, if they're worried about leaks, they can think, well, let's stick some full stuff out, see what surfaces, and that way you begin to narrow the field of...
The only reason I mentioned Millwall, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot there.
Yes.
When I was obviously found on the board, I've seen the misinformation. I mean, I've known the real information, and I've seen misinformation to try and catch, you know, where they put it out, and you think, oh, hang on, you know, who's done it and what like that. But no. So how long have you been a football journalist, then?
Well, I started when I was 20. I started off at the local paper down the road from me, which ironically, with my surname being Crawley, is the Crawley News. And I covered Crawley Town, who were then in non-league. They were playing in the, it was the Dr. Martins. It was a Midlands-based league predominantly, but Crawley were in that. And when I went to the SLP the first time round, late 90s, just as to cover Charlton, that was when we had a reporter for each club. That was when they just got promoted to the Premier League for the first time after the penalty shootout win. Then I left for a bit. I still did football, still did journalism. And then I came back to the SLP in, I think it was 2007. And I'm obviously a youthful looking guy. I know you're thinking I'm probably early 30s, but...
Oh, yeah, I was thinking late 20s, but yeah.
No, so I've probably been doing it, I would say, yeah, well, to give away my age a little bit, yeah, I've been doing it about 25 years. So, yeah, a long old while, which has been good. The industry's a lot different now, Mickey. It's like, it's harder because, well, elements of it become harder because obviously newspapers aren't, it's not so much about newspapers, it's about websites. How do you monetize the websites to make enough money? Because you haven't got the advertising revenue you get from papers. So there's a little bit more openings again. I'm seeing some more people that have worked for me. I've got young people like Kai who's been doing stuff. I've had other young people that have gone on from our place and got good jobs. So there are opportunities there, but I'd say the industry's obviously changed a huge amount from when I first
came. We said to Kai that the local papers are the best ways because they'll always take your stories because of the deadlines and the websites that you want. It's as if whenever there's a game for Millwall, you want to be able to put out four or five stories on match day so that you've got different hits. So you're generating more hits because most people will read four different stories by four different people on the same website if there was, there's access. Yeah. So we can say, we said to Kai, at least then you'll get your name out there. So when you're going forward and you're going for roles or anything else, you've got pre-published stuff.
Absolutely.
And I think it's good that you guys are printing this stuff under his name as well, because you're taking him as a sports reporter or staff reporter, but you seem to be putting his stuff out as his own name, which is great.
Yeah, no, people that are regular contributors for us, we set it up on the website so that their names go on it. And the sports reporter stuff isn't always, sometimes it's got the person's name on it, but it's when you click on the actual story sometimes. But it doesn't show on the homepage like you're talking about where you can see the reporter's name. We definitely, with everything that people do for us, where we can, we always credit it. We always obviously credit photos. I just think it's a good way in. Like there's so many people that have done, like young writers who've come in, they've written stuff, they've covered the clubs and they've managed to get, the SL South London Press, is a good regional paper that has done, it's got a good reputation for itself. So because of that, I think if people come through, it gives them, it definitely helps. It's about showing willing, isn't it? Trying to get on, I guess, in life and stuff like that. You've got to occasionally think, well, I'm going to do this because it will benefit me down the line. And obviously as well, with all the guys that do stuff, if they want it, I'm happy to give feedback. I'll try and give a bit of advice. I'm not saying everything I say is definitely right, but I've done it for a long time. So I kind of know some of the stuff and I know some of the mistakes and little bits that can sometimes help with, someone sort of reaching a level where they can maybe move on if they want to do that.
I know Kai's sitting there, but Kai's quite a good writer. For a lad, and I don't mean to blow smoke up your arse, Kyle, but for a young writer, your match summary stuff is good. When you do the videos for us, they're great. They get good numbers. Your channel was good. Hence why, we formed together, we got you on board as such and helping us out. But yeah, you're I mean, how you found stepping into the journalistic world for real then, Kai?
I've loved it. I just really like listening to the managers and stuff. And, as Rich has really helped me with the sort of like the changing of the angles and stuff and how you sort of, change your story and make it, it better and look for the angles in the headline and stuff. That's really helped. And it's quite interesting if you watch the videos on the YouTube, that there's a lot of the time there's a lot more detail into what they've actually put on the website as well, which is really helpful. So overall, I've really enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, I said to Kai, one of the things, because sometimes if you look at a website, any club it can be, I'm not giving it a particular club, you might see a load of quotes from someone, a manager, a player, whatever it might be. And I said to Kai, one of the things you've got to remember is that clubs don't always want things that are controversial. So if a manager's, or not controversial, but something that could potentially be taken, because clubs have a sort of code of conduct, I suppose, and that they don't tend to behave a certain way. So you might actually find that within a video that's embedded on a website or whatever, there might actually be a golden line in there that isn't actually written on the text format of it. Little things like that. I mean, as we go along with Kai, he's been listening to opposition managers and doing bits and pieces on that, which is good. And we'll just see as we go along. I mean, obviously, I'd like him to he's done some takeaways bits for us after games from Millwall as well. But yeah, I mean, you've been really eager and you've been just wanting to do as much as you can, and it's great. It's a good approach.
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, I loved it.
He's definitely eager, baby, isn't he? He's full of enthusiasm, and he's a good lad. He, for a kid who's 17, his head's definitely screwed on the right way.
I can't imagine what I was like at 17 writing about football. Not, I wouldn't have thought.
I wouldn't have been writing about football. Let's put it that way. So yeah. I just want to go back to transfer day. Transfer day, you were trolled superbly, the copycat account of yours was, if you're listening, and I don't know who it was, I might have ideas, but I don't know exactly who it is.
All right, okay.
I don't know who it is, but I know some of the ones what have done like channels before, but superbly done. And you seem to have hoodwinked quite a few people with some of the stories. But it must be quite a claim to fame to have a copycat account so well against your name. It must have caused you some problems, though.
Well, I think I had one similar. It was virtually the same. I had one a few, about probably 2 years ago, something like that. Yeah. Funnily enough, I'm waiting to see if the SLP gets verified, because if they get verified on Twitter, I think then the journalists can get verified. It's never really bothered me. I've never really been one person that's thought I need.
You can do it now anyway. If you go to your account, because you've got stuff being published and you're associated to it, you can do it. If you look at your account, we can talk off the show, but I can tell you that.
I did have a little look off the back of that the other day, and it seemed to suggest that you need the organisation to be verified first. Because I'm not a freelance journalist. I don't know exactly, but you're probably
because you're not freelance. Maybe.
So, but I mean, it doesn't really matter too much. I mean, some of the stuff is funny. I mean, I think wasn't my fake version saying that John Daddy Bavarsson had signed a new long-term contract? That was one of the ones, wasn't it?
Yeah. Jeff Wallace was going as well. That was the other one that got me. Yeah.
I know you said to me, Kai, you did
fell for a couple of them.
Yeah, I fell for a couple of them.
I can still remember, and I've tweeted about this at least a couple of times because it comes up as like almost an anniversary thing. I can remember reading Shoot and Match when I was a kid, and I can remember back in the day that I think it was the Shoot magazine, they had Ian Rush on the front cover and he had an Everton shirt on and it said Rush signs for Everton. And I remember running home to tell my dad, and my dad's sitting there with like trying to keep a straight face. And then saying to me, look at the day. And it was obviously, it was an April Fool's. And for years afterwards, him and my brother would bring it up regularly. So, and I completely fell for it. I went running home so excited, saying, you won't believe it. It's been happening for years, but just different formats.
How do you get on with Twitter? I like Twitter. You've got to understand that Twitter's not real, and it serves a purpose. For us, it's a way to promote the show, create interaction, build audience, and various avenues along those lines. But I don't get offended by a lot of the stuff on there. I ignore a lot of the stuff for insults and stuff like that. But I find it funny. I think it's good. I think there's some very, very talented people out there.
Yeah, there are. That's what I find. I think with anything, there's good and bad to any sort of social media platform, you know. But the thing that I do, there's so many things I see on there that make me laugh so hard. And you know that there's just going to be stuff on there that's going to amuse you. So I personally enjoy it. I mean, I think there are times I don't tend to get too much abuse. You get the odd people here and there that you just block, but I wouldn't say I'm a prolific blocker. But then I don't think I really get too many people that say too much. I don't particularly get upset by people saying things unless it gets really, it goes a bit over the top, or you feel someone's kind of just got something against you, so they'll kind of just keep trying to talk down the stuff you're posting about something. Yeah. You know, I've had a few that I've had to block like that, but I think it's good. It's funny. It's good.
Do you know, one thing what amazes me, right, when you know, I don't normally talk about it, but when I was found on the board, one of the things, and started to have more interaction with people in the club and everything else, the one thing that amazed me, and what was our found on the board, 2017, something like that, right? So it's fairly modern time, that the club still gets people, when we defeat a team from the opposition team, phone up the number over the weekend and leave abuse on the answer phone message.
Right, okay.
And I just honestly couldn't believe that people still in this day and age want to phone up and leave a message on an answer phone, abusing, you know, whoever it is. Some days, depending on what it was, I think when we done Leeds 4-3, the answer phone was rammed with people leaving, you know, dodgy messages and everything else. Did you not know that?
No, I didn't know it. I'd never heard that. I mean, that just surprised me.
Yeah. When you speak to billionaires and say, I'd love to get a copy of some of the messages and publish them, because they are brilliant. They must be brilliant. But I've heard them. Some of them are just fully laden with explicit language. When, you know, poor old what's her name on reception, when she comes in the morning and presses a button, and it's just, you know, untold messages of fans' abuse. So it's obviously, I think they've been in the pub or they're pissed and they just went, oh.
Yeah, they're filling up. I think going back to sort of social media, something like Twitter, you know, after a game, it's somewhere that people go to basically let out their frustration. And that's why you'll probably get fans that probably delete stuff the following day. I mean, just as in an angry reaction, or, you know, the one thing that happens, but you kind of accept it, I think, is when you're tweeting post-match stuff, you can see a lot of what kind of reaction is there. Because if you're tweeting about a manager's post-match quotes, or whatever it might be, it's people in the heat of the moment and they're angry. So they it's a platform, isn't it? So many fans go on there now after a game. If a team's played badly, they're gonna rant. So it's kind of replaced probably the phone-ins to a fair degree. I mean, I'm not saying I still, guilty pleasure, I still listen to that on the drive home every now and again, like Radio 5 or TalkSport, just for a bit of fun. But I would imagine they get a lot less callers because people just go on social media and do stuff now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you know, we've got a few interaction ideas going forward. But, yeah, it's one of those where you've got to be a bit careful because people do speak freely. And it's definitely possibly not something you'd want to do live. You'd definitely need to have a dump button just in case. But yeah, Kai, I've asked all the questions here. What questions you got? Come on, you I've sort of stopped you talking. Go on, fella.
What we just any questions? Yeah.
Any questions to Rich? Go on, and then we're pause in a minute and go to part two. We'll have a brief on West Brom, and then we'll do it. So yeah, go on.
So what was it like? What was it like having the deadline day? I think it was it 2 years ago, wasn't it? When was it Matt Southall for Charlton? They brought in all them players. That must be an absolute manic because
Matt Southall did the I still laugh thinking about it because it still gets posted when he said ready for deadline day and he had like crisps and soft drinks and all kind of like what sort of petrol station food that you've just gone in and bought. It looked so incredibly amateurish. And that transfer deadline, the one that was in the January, they obviously had no money, East Street Investments, and it wasn't something that I think supporters were fully aware of. I think they always believed there would be some money there because, you know, there was all this talk about what they were going to do. And in the end, they ended up signing. I think at that time he did a competition. Guess who our next signing was? And it was a guy, no one got it because it was I think if I'm right in saying off the top of my head, it was a guy, Matt Smith, who was at Man City. And literally no fan was ever going to guess it in a million years because it was just so left field. But they didn't have any money. So, yeah, some of the transfer windows are good fun. Like when Lyle, stayed, as Mickey was saying there, the good thing for, you know, the good thing for anybody on social media is if you've got that kind of platform, it can help. It obviously helps build followers, and that then can, you know, people then go to the website, which obviously hopefully helps keep you in a job for a bit longer. So it's that kind of thing that kind of helps.
And it must have been pretty good when Tim Cahill signed for Millwall a couple of years ago, was Cahill it? 2019.
Cahill was good. And I think we got, obviously we're an official media partner for the club, and we got first, I remember going to the training ground at Camon Road and sort of speaking to Tim for about 15, 20 minutes. He was good, obviously.
Very media trained, isn't he?
Yeah, very media trained. They gave good content as well, even though he's obviously played at the sort of very highest level. He still did give you a bit of stuff to work with. So, he was good. Obviously, it was almost impossible, I would think, to live up to the expectation level of what he would give to you guys that season because of what he'd done before in a Millwall shirt.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever due to play properly, was he? He was always going to be that bit in the dressing room to try and give us that extra oomph, which he did. But I don't think he probably played more than 40 minutes, did he, in his whole time back?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. He had a few appearances, and then obviously he had the Fulham game, didn't he, where he got done, and Mitrovic didn't get done in that game as well, so sort of after the event. But, that season was good, though, wasn't it? I mean, Millwall went so close. I was convinced that was the one season I was convinced Millwall would get to the playoff, championship playoffs. I mean, the team was just, it was just motoring, and the noise at the Den for that Fulham game, I remember in that first half, it was almost like electricity in the air. It was loud. And I still think if Millwall had gone ahead in that, it could have been a completely different game.
Because we did, didn't we? It was an offside goal, wasn't there, I think?
The goal was disallowed. Yeah. I think it was for a foul. Can't think who it was. Maybe it was Saville who was climbing over a player. Well, that's what the ref ruled. But yeah, I mean, you had Fulham at sixes and sevens, and then they managed to turn it around in the second half. I don't think Jordan Archer would look back too kindly on at least one or two of the goals he conceded in that second half.
No, they were the. I think there was a couple of games where we scored in the first minute back to back, didn't we? I think it was Hull and then Forest or something. So we were really flying at that. Well, it's just a shame we didn't make it, wasn't it? But
it was a brilliant team. It was a really, really good side, that side. And I think, obviously, George Saville coming back. I mean, I think for George, obviously, the team's had some issues with COVID, which every team's had. I think it's affected some of their fitness levels. But I look back at that team that almost got there, and I thought George Saville was brilliant that season. Not just the goals he scored, like the way that Millwall pressed that season was so good. And Sav was the guy at the front of that, who his energy levels were just unreal. And I felt once he left, Millwall, they didn't press anywhere near as effectively without him in the side. So when I heard he was coming back, obviously I thought it was a great signing. I still think it is. I just think it's probably going to take a bit of time for players to settle back down after.
He's got a new agent now, though, isn't he?
Oh, is it? Okay, I didn't know that. So. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's got a different agent to what he had before. Sorry, Kai. You were there, obviously, when Holloway was there.
I wasn't.
Were you not?
Well, I was at the paper, but that was Toby. That was Toby. Right. Toby Porter, who dealt with Ian Holloway. Yeah, I dealt with Holloway a bit at Palace.
Yeah, it was hard work, wasn't he? It was good. It was hard work. But yeah.
I had people that I enjoyed dealing with, but. Ian Holloway wouldn't be that high on my list of people. So
I was very close to him on the day when he came back with QPR. Was it QPR he came back with? I think it was QPR when he was called a cunt really bad when he started giving it on a coach. Okay. And I was right next to the players' entrance. I was against the ticket window, standing there, making sure obviously that it didn't go off, or making sure that I was witness in case it didn't go off to give our side of it. And I've never ducked so fast in my life. Someone threw a Magna bottle at him and it missed him and missed me, luckily enough. But if you can see the video, I'm wearing a green coat And as you watch it, when it's given the abuse to him as he's coming off the coach, you suddenly see me duck. And literally, I just caught it out of the corner of my eye coming towards me. And he was like, whoa. But yeah, no, I never liked him. I mean, I never really spoke to him. I saw him about a bit. He thought he was very flash and big, but he was, yeah, he summed me up when I summed him up when he hid in the dugout during his last game or so. And he just seemed to be, you know, and he took us for a lot of money, which you can't comment. He took us for a lot of money and just didn't want to go, wanted to take the payout. Mm. He knew what he was doing, allegedly.
Yeah. I think at Palace he was quite sort of hot and cold with the way that he was from time to time, and it wasn't that easy to deal with. I think we didn't really probably click. And so, you know, each their own. But as I say, as people that managers that I've spoken to, he wouldn't be one of the ones, you know, if you look at the managers I think I've had a good relationship with, and I would say quite a lot of them I have, at whatever clubs, he wasn't one that I did have a good relationship with. So, I used to deal with him when Toby was off, and that was interesting. So, but that's a good, yeah.
Did he remember you?
He remembered me. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I've had some good managers though, over the years, like Neil Warnock. I know people maybe don't like it, you know,
reputation,
but he was class. He was class.
Omar does this. He'd love to have him here.
Yeah,
he'd love him to be a Millwall manager. He just thinks that he'd definitely suit being a Millwall manager. Yeah. He just understands us. He gets us.
Yeah. He was always really complimentary about Millwall. Whenever he brought teams back, hasn't he, or brought teams over. Hmm. Yeah, Neil was good. I mean, most of the managers, you know, most of them I would say have been fine, or better than fine. I obviously got on really well with Powley. I knew him as a player. But Chopper was great when he was Millwall manager. Gary's obviously very, very good.
Yeah.
You know, he's been in terms of access and everything, he's excellent. So I've been fairly lucky so far. I haven't had too many really difficult ones to deal with.
Which is normally good.
Yeah.
It seems a good place. So look, we're going to end part one here. We're going to be back with part two in a moment. And we'll be talking about the game on Saturday, which is West Brom away. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. This is part two. And we're going to obviously do a preview on our away day on Saturday after international break against West Brom. And I feel really guilty. So I'm going to leave this bit out to Kai. Off you go, Kai.
No, I'm looking forward towards Saturday's game. It should be good. Tough team, obviously. But West Brom, I think Dara O'Shea's out now due to a knee injury he suffered the other day against Portugal, I think it was. And they've just brought in Keane Bryan, who's on a free transfer. And they've got a couple others out, Matt Clark. So they're quite vulnerable in the centre-back position. So hopefully we can, you know, exploit that with, you know, some pace in behind with Benny Kofobi and Shea Ojo. But yeah, looking forward to it. I just wonder whether, you know, Ojo will get his first game of the season, first start of the season, obviously after coming to us. I've been thinking recently about Savile, and obviously he hasn't started the best this season. But I wonder, with us last time, he did really well in the 4-4-2. If Rowett does continue with the 5-3-2, would it be worth, you know, dropping Savile back into the midfield, back into the two? Maybe, obviously, I know Leonard's injured, isn't he? But you know, someone like Keefton Bell, then pushing Ojo into the three, the higher one with Jed Nafobe. What do you think of that, Rich?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, judging by what David Livermore said, he said that Ojo is best sort of playing on the left and cutting in onto onto that right-hand side. I mean, I would think that he's got to try and, I mean, I think Ojo will probably start. I'd be surprised if he doesn't, just because I think, you know, he's obviously come with the fact that he's going to play games. He played him at Cardiff. I think the other thing that might come into the play at West Brom is height in that team, because I mean, I've watched quite a bit of West Brom on Quest on their show, and my God, are they direct. I mean, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, any throw-ins in their half are going to be launched in there, and they're just going to keep asking aerial questions of your team time and time again, whatever team that might be. So I think that's one of the problems that Millwall are going to have to combat, and I would think that's surely going to be... I mean, someone like Matt Smith, he's going to be key, I would think, in that game, probably arguably more for some of his defensive work, because literally anything inside that Millwall half is coming into your box, which is interesting because I think I was looking just before I came on, the most aerial duels won per game is Cardiff, 45.2 they average out at, Millwall 37.6 and West Brom 36. So the top three sides for aerial duels. Now, obviously, Millwall didn't deal massively well with set plays at Cardiff, did they? So they need to properly be switched on for this one. Yeah, I think it's a tough game, like you say, Kai. I mean, obviously, they're only behind Fulham in the table. And another stat I got for you, most shots per game, they average 17.4 in a game. That's more than Fulham, who did 16.4. So they create plenty of chances, which maybe isn't what you want to hear before you head to the Hawthorns, but...
No, I mean, I saw something earlier from Jed, actually, on TalkSport, I think it was. He said that Millwall conceded 6 set plays all season last year, and we've already conceded 5, I think it is, in all competitions this year.
Okay.
I think one of them came against Blackburn, conceded a couple against Cardiff. So, yeah, it's a bit, and West Brom have got the famous towel, haven't they, when they do a long throw. Yeah, so they weren't impressed. I think it was Peterborough, wasn't he, that Ferguson wasn't impressed with when they scored their 95th minute winner and he went running down the touchline celebrating with their fans. He didn't didn't take too well to that after the game. So hopefully it'll be a better outcome on Saturday. But it's a tough one. I mean, we did well 2 years ago, wasn't it? We drew 1-1, Smith scored.
Yeah.
So yeah, as you say, I reckon Smith could be a really big threat for us on Saturday.
I think as well, you know, Millwall tradition in the recent years, they've always played well against the sides that are fancied to do well, haven't they? I mean, even if you look at last season, the record against Norwich in both games were good results. You know, there are good results against Watford, albeit not the one towards the end of that season when they went up. But they've tended to equip themselves pretty well. So I don't necessarily see that as being a problem. I think defensively, the one thing that worries me a bit is not having Sean Hutchinson, because having watched the team for the last few years, I think he's got to be up there as one of Millwall's best players in terms of consistency. He's been superb, and I think he's been such a good centre half. I think the fact he's been out, it doesn't help Millwall. You know, that's no reflection on the players that have come in. I just think I think any team would miss someone like Hutch in the way that he can play at the back, the way he can help organise, wins the ball in the air. He's so good in the air. I think that's the shame for this one. Because I think with West Brom, you know what you're going to get. Possession-wise, they're very low. Millwall are averaging more possession than West Brom this season. So I think West Brom are like 20th or something for possession in the division. So you know what you're going to get. They're going to come at you, and they're going to... I mean, Valerian Ismail's team was very similar at Barnsley. The difference he's got now is he's got better players technically to probably get results. So I think it's a difficult one for Millwall. It's a bit of a free hit in some respects. I'm not saying that as in like they can go there and play terribly, but it's not necessarily a game that you would expect. Most teams in the division wouldn't go there and say, well, we expect to win this game, would they? That you go there and hope they get a good result.
Yeah, and any balls that come into the box have got quality, you know, with Alex Mowat on the free kicks in the corners. It'd just be interesting to see. I wonder whether, obviously, I know Ojo's come in and, you know, and Rowett does play that 5-3-2. Does that maybe suggest a system change, or would you expect to see maybe Ojo try to be a little bit converted into just behind the two strikers or play up top with a Phoebe with Jed in behind now?
Yeah, I mean, I've not been told this for sure, but I can't see any reason why the system's going to change.
Yeah.
From the three centre-backs, because I think it's, particularly away from home, I think, you know, people will have their own thoughts on what should happen in home games. I think particularly for away games, the three at the back, the switch that Gary made to try and change the team's away form, which had been a bit of a struggle before he came in, I think, like, that I just don't see that changing. I don't see why Gary would change it, particularly against the team like West Brom, where you know you're going to be asked a lot of questions. I think you're going to want the height of Ballard, Cooper, Murray Wallace. You know, you're going to want those people that can win those aerial balls. So I think Ojo's going to have to fit somewhere else. I mean, Gary has said he can play right across the front line, as in, like, you know, all three positions behind the striker. I guess you could play him up top. I mean, he's done it with Mason and Jed, hasn't he? Because he's wanted that kind of pace. And the problem with Matt Smith, in Gary's view, I think, has been at times that Matt's got many attributes that are really good, but obviously he's not a player that can chase the back four, backwards and forwards, and shuttle run across and do that side of it, whereas someone like Bennett, Jed or Mason can do that. So, but in saying that, I still think Matt Smith will play at the weekend for exactly the reasons I've said. I think it's going to be an aerial test, and he's so good in the air. I mean, he wins a ridiculous amount of ball. I think he's got to be in there.
Yeah, and then, as you said, they've kept the 20th lowest possession, so they're not going to be knocking it around the back four with Fulham and stuff. But the question is, obviously, with Marlon going to Pompey now, Billy Mitchell, I guess, keeps his place at right back while Danny's out. I thought Billy did well against Blackpool. Yeah. Maybe didn't offer as much attacking threat as Danny would, but really quite good defensively. Do you expect him to keep his place in the right back?
Yeah, I would think so. I was at the Blackpool game. It's different, isn't it, when it's a cup game. But I thought Billy, along with Murray Wallace, I thought they were probably the two best performers in that game before that. I thought he was excellent in the wing-back role. It's obviously different when you're playing against the top-end championship sides. But, yeah, I think he'll definitely play. I think probably, to be fair, if Ryan Leonard was fit, I think that Gary would be bringing him in to play that role for that kind of game, just because physically and everything else and experience, I think you maybe look at that. But, I definitely think that Billy Mitchell will stay in. I mean, obviously, if Danny McNamara was fit, he starts, doesn't he? But, Ryan Leonard's been another big miss, I think. He's been unfortunate with injuries this season, last season. I just think he's a really good, honest pro, very good player, very versatile, like he showed when he played in the back three, when he played at centre-back. I think, again, you're missing some players, and it's difficult for Millwall because you're not blessed with the squads, the depth that some of the other teams have got.
No, and talking about former Millwall players, Carrie Kane's just scored an absolute worldie for England to put them 1-0 up against Poland. Really, really good finish. But I was going to ask about Keefton Beldon-Evans. With Keith, do you think that, obviously you said that the aerial, I think, you know, Evans is probably a lot taller than Keefton Beld. On Saturday, does Keefton Beld give us a little bit more, you know, aggressiveness, or would you play Evans, who would probably give you a bit more height and a bit more, ability to cope with the set pieces?
Well, again, I would say, luckily I'm not the manager, so it doesn't really matter probably what I think too much. But I think I would probably go with Evans again for the height if it's a straight choice between the two. I like Keefton Beld. I think he's you can see he's got that knowledge, and when he's looking for where the ball needs to be played and the way he's talking to some of the other players, I think he's a really good sort of knowledgeable midfielder. I think in this one, height's going to be key. I personally just think. And athleticism. And that's the problem with a lot of the Premier League teams. Like when Gary talked about Fulham, if you look at how quickly they could counter you at the Den, you know, they're just getting the ball and they've got, I mean, like Cabano shouldn't have even been playing in that match, but they had injuries. Cavalero probably wouldn't have played in that match if they didn't have injuries or suspensions. And yet you've got these two guys that the pace and power they had, they just made them too difficult to handle. And that's the problem. I think it probably isn't just a height thing, because you're going to come up against a West Brom side that are going to be so rapid as well and getting onto things that you need that bit of pace in the side as well. It's a tricky one, I think.
So who would be your starting 11 for Saturday then, Rich?
Crikey, that's a good question. I need to have a look at the last match. Let me see if I can pick that up.
Got it, Kai. Why are you trying to cop out and have a bit of time to think? who's your starting 11 for Saturday then, Kai?
I'll go with, I think Gary Rowell will stay with a 5-3-2, won't he? So I'll go with Barton Gold, Billy right back, Ballard, Cooper, Murray Wallace at three at the back, and then obviously Malone at left back. The three in the middle, purely for the reason of height as well. I'd go with Saville and Evans, but Keith or Evans, I'm not too fussed whichever one plays. And then I go Jed in behind Benikofobi and Sheyojo. But on that point, I think, if obviously I know it might be a bit too soon for him. I read somewhere earlier about Mason Bennett, but he could be quite key in the next couple of weeks with obviously the rotation of the four players up top.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at it now that I've got the team back up from the Blackpool game, if I'm looking at that team and I'm thinking, who do I bring in or out? It's a difficult one because I think that I think that he could potentially bring in Evans for Kieftenbeld. I don't know how much you gain or lose by that change. I don't necessarily think it's particularly a deal breaker which one of those two plays, although as we said already, I think Evans is better in the air. The thing that's a question mark for me is I think perhaps looking at it, if Matt Smith plays, which I've said already I think he will, I don't necessarily know if Ojo does make my team, because I probably wouldn't change it too much beyond Evans maybe for Kieftenbeld. I mean, Ojo could potentially come in for Bennick, but Bennick's been playing well. I thought he was, you know, he's lively again against Blackpool. I think it'd be pretty unfair on him if he came out of the team. I think normally I would say that someone like Ojo would potentially come in maybe for Matt Smith, and you'd play, you know, you'd have Bennick up through the middle maybe, and, you know, the sort of other players around him. So, yeah, I would say I maybe only go on one change, and maybe actually Ojo maybe on the bench. But yeah, I'm sure I'll be completely wrong.
Or put Ojo on first and then swap him for Matt Smith.
Yeah.
You know, 60 minutes or so. Because, I mean, I don't know how match fit he is. And obviously, that's the key at the minute, isn't it, is the match fitness. Because I think that's why we're not seeing the Saville what we had before. Because I think he had COVID, didn't he? And he's... I don't know how far behind on the training where he is, because we don't know how badly COVID affects professional athletes either, do we? You know, and how much their training schedule stops. If, you know, if he's had to isolate for 10 days or whatever, and if he hasn't been doing the same amount of training because of being ill as the other guys, it sort of puts him back 2, 3, 4 weeks behind the other guys, doesn't it? And he doesn't look fully fit on the pitch. He's blowing hard. He just doesn't look as if he's full match fitness yet.
I know that. I think Ryan Leonard last season, well, actually, Jake Hooper, actually, obviously, when you consider the amount of games he chained together, obviously played on with the shoulder as well. And I think he had, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that he had COVID last season and then couldn't train. And I think the other players were like, wow, this guy that's a machine that has churned out game after game after game, he's actually saying, I can't, although I'm back, like, and I'm clear to be training, I don't feel right. I can't. So I think it goes to show that these guys, when they get it, it does obviously really massively affect them. And that's before you look at who's been vaccinated, who hasn't, for various reasons. That's personal choice to players. So obviously, if you haven't been vaccinated, the likelihood is probably it's going to hit you even harder. So, I think it's a difficult one on that side. I think for any of these players, I think you can only really judge signings, and I'm talking about George coming back as well. I think the only real fair thing to do is judge him at the end of a season or by the following window, because players for all manner of reasons can take time to settle back in, can't they? You know,
no, that's it. And we've said all along, you know, we can't really be judging Millwall in 4 or 5 games. When we get the 10, 12 games, then we can judge where we are. But, you know, being on the Gary out brigade and all that 4 games in, I think it's a bit much. He has to change the formation he's playing at home, because I think he's not going to get away with paying 5 at home for the rest of the season. I think he needs to change up a bit. 5 away, definitely. But I think he needs to look at the formation at home, because now you've got fans back, he's going to get it. I can see the fans jumping right on him this season. Especially if we're just going for draws rather than wins every game.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think the fans is another factor for every club, every manager. Before it was quite sanitized, and you know, you wouldn't get that sort of frustration if a team was building slowly from the back. And I'm not saying this necessarily about Millwall. I'm just talking generally. Teams could play a different style and know that there wasn't going to be that sort of displeasure that would come down from supporters, whereas that's something that's going to change. That's changed this season. So it felt like Blackpool was I thought Blackpool was a big game. I thought the players looked nervy, particularly. It was almost like they knew that if once they went down to 10 men, that if they didn't win it, they were going to be they were going to get it. And I think the players felt a pressure with that. And that's why, again, it was huge. Jed, I mean, how many times has he stepped up when he's needed to? And he puts that free kick into the top corner. I think he was huge. Keeping Jed, I just don't think people can talk about, oh, well, he's in the final year of his contract. And, you know, if you get a good offer for him, but it would have to be very good money, because how do you replace Jed Wallace? I think his value under contract, Millwall wouldn't be able to get, probably wouldn't stretch to that cost of that player.
I understand you might not be able to answer this, or you might be able to, but we'll ask the question anyway as we're coming towards the end. I'll be cheeky. Was there interest for Jed? Was there inquiries for Jed, or do you not know?
I think there was. I don't know. I think the thing that I would say with that is there's a difference between what would be a formal offer and what would be a club saying, how would this work with you if we went to this kind of level? So I'm not saying that there was like an official thing. I think it's a similar scenario. I'm not saying Jed will go, by the way. I don't know. Jed's his own man, and I don't know for sure what he'll do. But it was a bit similar with Lee Gregory. The final year of his contract, obviously the club activated a 12-month extension. The way I'm led to understand it, there was interest that summer. But the club, and I think rightfully so, felt that having Lee Gregory for the final that last season was worth more to them than what they viewed to be a figure that wasn't really that much in the grander scheme of things. And so it's that classic thing, isn't it? How do you value him?
I would have said before COVID, you might have been able to get, looking at transfers and everything else, you would have probably been able to look at 8 to 10 million for Jed. Mm. But with COVID and where the money is and everything else now, you're probably looking at that figure as probably 3 to 5 million. And is 3 to 5 million what you're going to get for 3 to 5 million? I don't think you're going to get a lot. And you're definitely not going to get a player what we're replacing.
No.
You know, Jed's taking a gamble. He wants Premiership and he wants the payday, doesn't he? For the last couple of years that he'll probably be playing. He's, what, 28 now, 29?
Yeah, as you say, it's a big option. It's a big stage of his career that he's coming into. Yeah. I mean, Jed's, I think he did something with a podcast this week, you can have a podcast, not the top 20 podcast. And I think he said in that he was just looking to, in terms of football, I think, the problem for Jed as well, and I might be completely wrong with this, I think Jed just wants to, as you say, play Premier League football. I'm not sure the money is particularly the bill. Obviously, it's nice to get it, I'm sure, and football is a short career, but I think it's that feeling of being able to get there to the Premier League. And the thing with Jed is I think he's felt he's been at a Millwall team that's been close, like more than once, maybe just a player short or maybe two players short, but it's so hard. Because football generally, each division you look at, it tends to work that the teams that spend the most money, they are the ones that are near the top. There's exceptions, like Barnsley last season obviously punched above their weight, but it's hard to do that consistently. I don't know with Jed. I mean, I guess he will probably just see how the season pans out, and then he'll obviously look at what options he's got, and whether that be staying in Millwall. I mean, if he signs another deal at Millwall, you're obviously getting a very, very big chunk of the best years of his career.
100%.
So, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think I'd begrudge him if he went to a Premiership. If he went to another League One, you know, like a Championship team, not League One, Championship team, then I think I'd be a bit begrieved. But if he went to a Premiership, I don't think I'd hold it against him. I think it'll be good to watch him at a Prem and actually seeing his ability, so
he's given up. Well, I mean, the one thing I'd say with Jed, and he says it himself, but he never looks to go into hiding in a game. He cannot be playing well, or he can be playing very well. He'll always want the ball. He's not one of those guys that will just disappear. And so I think he's done. I think he's been a really, really good Millwall player. And obviously, from a selfish viewpoint, he's a bloody good interview, so I'd like him to sign a new contract for that alone.
Just one question, Rich, and before we look to tie up and end, John Daddy, not going anywhere in January? Or do you think he'll be good in January?
Maybe. I'd see. It depends. Is John Daly making his own decision, or is it like his agent is advising him? I don't know. Is the honest answer. But I would say that it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me that he didn't maybe look to go in the summer. It would not make a lot of sense to me if he just has a whole year of not really playing any football. I think he'd be mad not to maybe look at something, depending if the clubs are still prepared to pay a decent portion of his salary.
I don't know if Iceland's out of World Cup or with the qualifying, how they're doing in there, but I would have thought that he'd be aiming to get into international football.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking to get into, you know, obviously not League One, but looking to maybe get into a team where he can actually start playing football, because I just don't think he fits into Gary's formation or idea of a, you know, a starting 11.
No. He had a little spell, didn't he? I think it was it last season? Was it Bristol City where he scored? And he had a couple of games where he thought maybe he scored, did that bounce off him?
But yeah.
Yeah, true. But he played. I think that game is distance that he covered. You know, it was the club were saying afterwards how much he covered ground wise, and I thought maybe there was something that was going to happen for him, but then it just hasn't. And I don't know. I think sometimes players worry about dropping. Like if you drop to them. League One level and it doesn't work out for you, does that then diminish even more your options? But I suppose it comes down to how much you back your ability at times, doesn't it? If you think I can go to the League One and score 15, 20 goals, all of a sudden he's probably got a good move.
No, that's it. And it opens up the window where you've got a team bottom of the Championship who needs someone who can potentially score, and you sort of take a risk, isn't there? So it's an ongoing... football is all about gambles, really, and it's... You know, at any time you know, it can be over for you. So take what you can while you can and look forward. But if Daddy stays and he doesn't go in the January window, I am more than happy, because when we play Blackpool on the 22nd of January, my co-host and my partner who I do the podcast with made a bet that he will take a swim in Blackpool Sea on the 22nd when we go up there. So, yeah, you know, feel more than welcome, Rich, just before that week that you can just post that Omar from here. Once the transfer window shuts in January and Daddy's still here, feel free to post it front page if you want, mate. You know, just get it out so he can't back out, you know.
So what he's saying, John Daddy will...
What's the bet? That John Daddy would go, and the first bet with last season was... he reckoned that if John Daddy, that was it, there was two bets. If John Daddy scores 20 goals, he'd streak in Borac Mankini from the bank to the Queen Vic down Grange Road. And that one we're never really going to see. But if he's still here after both transfer windows, then he will go for a swim in Blackpool.
Brilliant, but not in the Mankini, or is that in the Mankini as well?
Unless someone wants to make a large donation to charity, and then maybe we can convince him that way. But I don't think it'll be able to make it. And I'm not doing anything. I'm not making any stupid guesses. Kai's got one as well. That if we get promoted, then he's safe. But if we don't get promoted, then he's going swimming at Bournemouth.
Oh, okay. Well, Bournemouth probably.
Yeah, not so bad in May, is it? But
no. That might be nice, actually, Kai.
Yeah, might not be bad at all. Yeah, Blackpool in January, not my cup of tea. Thanks. No.
No, that's it. Well, look, Rich, we've had you for about an hour and 20 minutes. I really, really appreciate your time. Thanks to Kai for setting up. We're definitely going to have you back on a few more shows going forward, especially when Omar's back, because Omar will no doubt like to ask your opinion on a few. Different things, you know, positioning and stuff like that within Millwall. But yeah, you've been a great guest.
Yeah, no worries.
Much appreciated. Look, if you've enjoyed the show, you know what to do. It's give us that five-star rating. Doesn't really do anything major, makes us feel good, and it livens up our group chat between us. But what it does do is help with breaking iTunes algorithm and helps to get us further up the iTunes charts as such, or puts us in front of more people, really. Don't forget, the show goes out on YouTube. If you're not already on YouTube, then you can find us at That Millwall Pod. We're also all the way across social media with the same account name. And you can find us across TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc., etc., etc. Don't forget, Richard is on Twitter. You can find him on, is it Rich Cowley?
Rich Cowley SLP.
Rich Cowley SLP. There you go. You can find him. He's definitely good fun to follow, especially around transfer day. And remember, he's got about 19,000 followers. The copy account has about 2 or 3. So just make sure when you see that you'll see the difference and don't start following the wrong account. We'll be back again on Sunday night / Monday morning. You've been listening to that Millwall podcast. And thanks very much. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.